You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
I'm Father Paul Samasumo. Nigeria is having to grapple with the increase in violent clashes blamed on Fulani herdsmen. Many communities in Nigeria, particularly those in the north, central, and the southern states of Nigeria, have come under these attacks. The Bishop of Funsuka Diocese in Nigeria, Godfrey Onah, has been at the forefront of trying to console communities under attack and also urging the federal government of Nigeria to do something about the attacks before things truly spiral out of control. Bishop Onah is our guest, and he tries to explain just exactly what is happening in these areas.
Thank you. As you rightly said, there was, on the 25th of April, an attack on a local population in my diocese that took many lives. Up to now, it is difficult to say exactly how many died. But it was not the first incident. There have been many of such incidents in the past, only that this one was on a proportion that we never experienced before. Before, these men, whom we cannot easily identify, would attack, kill, maim, burn down houses, rape women, and disappear. Initially, it was all presented as the clash between nomadic herdsmen and local communities of farmers. And of course, one would expect that the approaches of the two groups would be different. Farmers are residential, sedentary, sort of, they reside in a place and they protect their property and their farms there, whereas the nomadic herdsmen just pass along. Sometime in the past, very distant past, the herdsmen had a corridor along major roads where they passed, and the cattle would feed on the grass on the roadsides without destroying things. I remember as a boy growing up, we lived along such roads, and they would stop in open fields of schools and graze in such places and continue their journey, and there was no disturbance. Suddenly, from the 80s, with the presence of the military and northern leaders of this military, there was a type of emboldening that one would notice in these herdsmen that made them presume they could destroy things and kill without being held accountable for it. One thought it was because of the military. After that, with the return of civilian rule, one would have expected there to be put in place some laws that would protect the property of the citizens while giving every other Nigerian the right to pursue his or her legitimate business. Of course, cattle rearing is business, farming is also business, and everybody has right to carry on his or her own business without destroying the business of another or endangering the life of others. One notices that since the Boko Haram insurgents, there has been a terrible mix-up in Nigerian social life, politics, and economy. And Nigeria is on its own already a sufficiently complex country, and that is also, thanks to God, partly responsible for our dynamism. Because finding principles of coexistence within such multiplicity requires some creativity. And Nigerians have been very good at that. I must give them credit. You have northerners who settled in the south for years, and the southerners were all over the country, and that is a good point. But these new phenomenon that just emerged in the past years, especially with the Boko Haram insurgency, is that there is a mix-up between the herdsmen, some militants, and some people whom we have reasons to believe they are jihadists, aggressive jihadists, who are intent on spreading a certain form of Islam. I believe they also a problem to other Muslims in the country, But the Christians, especially the southerners, found this phenomenon new and were at a loss about how to react and how to handle it. So in the case of that community, the Nimbo community in my diocese, for instance, the community heard rumors that there was going to be an attack by these headsmen. While they were still planning on how to protect themselves or react to it, they alerted the government and the security agencies were all alerted, and there were meetings upon meetings. Nobody knew why they wanted to attack. And suddenly when everybody thought they were, the community was being protected by the police, there was just within a short moment of change of guard, so to speak, between the military or the police officers, they struck. And they struck and seemed to have had just enough time to cause their carnage and again disappear into the bush. They came with no vehicles, and yet they came in large numbers on foot from the bush and were able to kill many people and burn houses. And now this is the peculiarity that makes all of us curious. They were killing as much as they could. But when it came to destruction of property and burning houses, they targeted religious houses, Christian religious houses. They burnt the house of a pastor of the Christ Apostolic Church, and from there went straight to the Catholic priest's residence. In between, they passed very many other houses they could have burnt if they only wanted to destroy the houses of the local population. At the parish priest's house, they spent over 45 minutes looking for petrol to burn the house and did not succeed, firing guns into the rooms where the people were hiding, because they noticed people were hiding in the rooms. Fortunately, they didn't kill any within the house but outside. And they couldn't burn the house because they did not find any petrol. And one would ask, if they just wanted to intimidate the people or terrorize them by burning their houses, why select only Christian houses? And one of the witnesses testified that as they were trying to burn the house, the father's house, they were shouting Allahu Akbar, which is a jihadi war slogan, so to speak. So now we are asking, what is the relationship between the herdsmen and these seemingly well-trained militants? Intelligence reports or even some observation trying to understand the modus operandi. For whatever grievance that the herdsmen had against the community, they employed the services of these militants who operate almost independently. And they were imported, so to speak, from outside the locality, from very far away places in the north. Some even suspect from outside Nigeria, because they think some believe it is a well-organized militant group, always at the service of their, to put it in inverted commas, fellow Fulanese, who may have needs for their military services at any moment. Now, we are asking, how is the government reacting to all that? The church is bewildered at the total or near total silence of the federal government on these issues. The unity that we have so labored for and we so appreciate as Nigerians and we are so proud of is now being gradually eroded and endangered by some of these violent elements. On the other hand, you have pockets of dissatisfied young people in other sections of Nigeria that no longer feel themselves welcome in the United Nigeria. And they are now agitating for self-governance and autonomy more loudly than ever heard in the past. Because they would say, and you find it difficult to blame them, if a federal Nigerian government cannot protect us, then self-determination is the only option open to us. And those of us who are a little older are seeing a replay of what happened in the 60s. after the confusion of the coup and counter-coup, and some sections of the country were no longer welcome in other sections, they withdrew from those sections because they were being killed. And the only alternative they had when the Federation could no longer work was to declare themselves an independent Republic of Biafra. And of course, it took 30 months of brutal war to suppress that movement. It's often not put on record that that was the first recorded modern ethnic cleansing in Africa, modern one, and genocide as well, because it targeted a particular ethnic group. Now, younger people who did not experience this horror are now impatient with the structure now. And the church finds itself in a very difficult situation. One, providing immediate solace and comfort to those who are constantly being terrorized and butchered without respect by fellow Nigerians, supposedly. For the period of that attack, for about a week, some were sleeping inside my uncompleted cathedral. That was their only home, one among so many others. Others just found refuge in the homes of nearby relatives and friends. So we have to provide assistance to those directly affected. Then preach to Nigerians and to government to do the right thing, for a conversion of heart, to accept the fact that we're all Nigerians within a multi-ethnic and multi-religious environment. That is the way we have lived since after the unification of Nigeria, which we call amalgamation in 1914. And it has not been easy, but we have handled it relatively well, apart from the Civil War. So we are preaching a conversion of hearts for this acceptance. What we have in Nigeria should be enough for all of us to coexist. Then again, we are asking the government to live up to its responsibility as government. Because if the law is seen to be absent, or if it is there and nobody is ready to enforce it, then others may invent laws or take some laws into their hands. And morally, even though you find them legally culpable, you may not find them morally responsible for that if they find themselves with their back on the wall. And we are trying to tell, anyway, our people that nothing will justify violence in the life of any human being, let alone a Christian. But it's a gospel that we are finding more and more difficult to preach with coherence in the face of blatant violation of anything that one could realize, recognize as law on the part of some people without any of them being held accountable for it. So that is the situation. The other thing the church also does is to create a type of awareness in the minds of the people to make them security conscious, and also to get the youth gainfully employed, to propose and suggest to them alternatives, because Nigeria is going through a very difficult period economically, and that creates a lot of hardship for the people. And the young, unemployed, angry people become easy instruments in the hands of some of the greedy warmongers who would gladly not hesitate in seeing Nigeria thrown into a full-blown war or even conflict. And let us not also forget that world over, there are economies that are sustained by sales of arms. Whether you call them light or heavy, they are all arms, and none of them is manufactured or produced in any African country, but we're slaughtering ourselves with them. So you find these so-called herdsmen moving around with semi-automatic and full automatic assault rifles, and nothing happens. So somebody somewhere is gaining from the process. And other parts, some people in Nigeria strongly feel that some lawbreakers are being protected simply because those who are their brothers or their religious partners right now in government.
Are you getting the cooperation of the federal government? You spoke of the silence. Do you feel the lacuna that these herders took advantage of has been addressed for the future?
It will be difficult for me to answer in the affirmative. The federal government is not seen by most Nigerians as doing enough to protect the life and property of Nigerians in any part. And we are wondering where all our resources are going if they are not channeled to at least the basic we have to live before we have to think of progress. If we can't live first, if our lives are not guaranteed, we cannot talk of other things. So the federal government controls the army, controls the police, controls the military and the police. And it is only from the federal government that directives can come for these law enforcement agents and military groups to do their work. One, two, to provide the necessary equipment for them to do that work. Because we also, in all fairness to the police in Nigeria, we see them expose themselves every day to great dangers to their lives without much to show for it in terms of equipment or even remuneration. And one would not blame them if they run away at the near first possibility. Many of them have been very heroic, but others may not have been as heroic. But I think it all depends on what the center is doing. Yes, it may not be seen clearly and easily or directly as Muslim versus Christian. Because in the first place, those people who were killed were not killed in churches but outside. But the religious element is strongly there. The religious element is strongly there because the militants, we know where they belong. And when killing a fellow Nigerian and you are shouting a slogan, Allahu Akbar, then you will not blame anybody if you attribute it to being a Muslim militant group. So, and unfortunately now we have a northerner, Fulani Muslim, as president. For his own credibility in the country, he needs to come out clearly and firmly. Clearly and firmly, and protect the lives of Nigerians, no matter where we live. Otherwise, all the other talk about one Nigeria, about fight against corruption, would all be empty and hollow talk.
My Lord Bishop, it's a lot of pressure on you as a leader, a Christian leader on there. What kind of support do you feel you need from the world, from fellow Nigerians, from fellow bishops? Do you feel support from, for example, any imams in the region, or what would be your appeal?
Well, I will talk as Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Nsukka. The support we have received so far came from various organs and organizations. In the first place, the Church, the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church in the region reacted in a very concrete and visible way. Also, the Anglican Communion in the area. It became also an occasion for some ecumenical encounter and prayer and solidarity for the two confessions. And some aid groups, also government-based intervention groups, have attended to the needs of the people, providing some shelter. And there was also some increase of government presence, of police presence. But that increase of police presence, I don't think, has been enough to prevent reoccurrence of such, because even now, as I talk to you, some such incidents are still being repeated in that same area, though not in the same magnitude. And what other form of support do we need from the world, from the church? First, from the church, we need prayer. From fellow Christians all around the world, we need prayer. And from governments all around the world, we need a united condemnation of violence, of propagation of any religious belief through murder or violence or war. Because, as the Pope usually says, nobody has a right to kill in the name of God. And also, foreign governments have to think seriously about their so-called, how do they call it in English? In Italian, it's called armi leggere, light arms. These are the things that are killing us, not the the aircraft carriers and so on, or the rocket launchers, but the so-called light arms. So their diffusion, finding them in the hands of people who have no right to bear arms, should not be supported by or encouraged by anybody. So there should be also a politics of fair distribution of world amenities. I think the world leaders are underestimating the problem they are causing for everybody by the continuous impoverishment of some sections of the world, like Africa. Nobody who is comfortable, or let me not say nobody, most people who are comfortable and who see a meaning in their life would want to go and slaughter other people for no just cause. It is frustration that leads some of these young people, makes them easily recruitable to such ventures or such violence. So I think world leaders should think seriously about the level of poverty they are creating in some parts of the world. I have always said this with regard to Africa. The world has everything to gain from a stable, wealthy Africa. Because by the time you have hundreds of millions of young people who have nothing to lose because they have been so impoverished, every part of the world will feel their anger, because you cannot negotiate with a person who has nothing to lose.
Thank you very much for according us your time, and we do hope and pray that the situation does not escalate.
Definitely, there are two things that give me hope. One is my unshaking and unshakable faith in God's mercy, providence, and love shown in Christ. I have absolute confidence that will see us through. Secondly, on a lower grade but equally important, Nigerians are very resilient and positive-looking people. A 60-year-old poor Nigerian will believe that one day he will be rich. So in spite of the difficulty we find ourselves in, we strongly believe and we work for it that one day there will be peace and prosperity, or greater peace and prosperity in that country. Because already we are enjoying relative peace and prosperity compared to other brothers and sisters of ours in other parts of the world.
Bishop Godfrey Onah of Nsukka Diocese in Nigeria. I'm Father Paul Samasumo.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudato Jesus Christus.